Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast about the Doom Patrol by two guys that love the Doom Patrol and can't get enough Doom Patrol.
Hello, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks, H-I-X. And you can send us emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're on Facebook under Waiting for Doom. If you want to see posts about our show and about the Doom Patrol in general, you can go to mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And our many, 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 many festive episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com. Ho, ho, ho.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDpod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, this week I was looking at a lovely article, The Year in Queer, which is, you're not going to see that article on many other sites. No. Comicosity is the one for that. But it summarises what's been happening in comics as far as representation,
LGBTQI.
Thank you, Mike. In all that space. So DC Comics had some very good representation this year. And I think there might be more to come from DC.
I think it's great to see it finally getting the spotlight in the comic world. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. But Mike, how was your week or couple of weeks in comics?
Couple of weeks. Yes, we took a break. Surprise.
I'm surprise. Sure. Surprise break.
It's like spring break, but more surprisier. It's been all right. I have to say, much to my shame, I have still not read a single comic in the last 2 weeks, apart from the one I'll be discussing on this week's episode.
Is this some sort of pre-Christmas fast, or,
I'm going to say yes. Yes, it is, because I have a huge stack of comics to get through, and I've got 2 weeks off over Christmas, so I think that's going to be the perfect time to sit my fat ass down on the lounge and get caught up. But yeah, it's just been really crazy at my work. It's, you kind of expect that with people going on leave around Christmas time that things will get quieter. No, it has not gotten quieter. It has not got any less busier. It's got even more busy at work. And, so that's been a bit stressful. But, I'm looking forward to the Christmas break more than anything, and then I will catch up on my comics. I did go and see Rogue One, though, last week. Have you seen that yet, Paul?
What's that?
There's this series called Star War.
Oh, right. Kirk, Spock. Yep.
Yeah, that's the one. Yep. That's it. And they fight the Cylons. Yeah.
Yep.
From their TARDIS.
Yeah. I ain't afraid of no Cylons. Yeah, that's right. I haven't seen that.
Okay.
But I might when life gets back to normal.
Okay. How has your time off been?
I actually did read some comics.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I could wait for you to ask me. I could just launch straight into it.
Go for it.
I've been reading Sugar and Spike, the series within the Legends of Tomorrow miniseries. That was basically DC put 4 6-issue miniseries and jammed them all into one book, making it prohibitively expensive to most people. But one of the good things was people like Mark Gray reviewed it, and so I was able to suss what I really wanted from it. And what I really wanted was the Sugar and Spike series, which has just been collected.
Okay.
Come out in a nice fetching little trade, which is basically Sugar and Spike. They used to be, you know, sort of cutesy kids who had a comedy series in the 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. went for a long time, beloved by many people. I've never actually read it. But this is the grown-up version, and they are private investigators whose job is investigating and cleaning up some of the embarrassing things that the superheroes have done over the decades, mostly in the Silver Age. So when Superman created an island in the shape of Superman and then abandoned it, these are the people who go and sort out things for him.
Right.
Or when Green Lantern used to fly around with a little space flower on his shoulder. Whatever happened to that space flower? Yeah. This comic will answer that question for you.
Wow, or when
Wonder Woman almost got married and is that now getting blackmailed by someone who says that they are her husband, who's actually a monster.
Wow, okay.
So
I was going to say it's almost like Niles and, you know, his marital problems.
Yeah. But it's written by Keith Giffen, and when Keith Giffen is on, he's really on, and mm-hmm. he's very on with this book, and it's good Keith Giffen. And the art is by a lady called Bilquis Everly.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this was one of the first things that really got her noticed. And now she is going on to Wonder Woman to replace, what's her face?
Nicola Scott.
Nicola Scott. Great Scott, as we call her.
I'd say Great Scott. I didn't know Nicola was leaving that book.
Oh. No, it's not. She was only coming on for the year one arc.
True. Yeah.
And I think she's going off, and her and Greg Rucka are going to get their Black Magic comic back on
again. I'd read that they'd already they'd had to push that back again for the next arc. So
yes, so it's not a I'm leaving, I'm sick of this. It's scheduled.
There we go. Okay.
A good run there. Yeah. Anyway, but so Bilquis is coming on to Wonder Woman, so that's exciting. Mm-hmm. And apart from that, I got from the library Paper Girls by Brian K. Vaughan.
Excellent choice, sir.
And yeah, what's going on with that? I don't. It was interesting. I don't fully get it.
Yeah. I'm a bit behind on that too. I think I've gotten through the first 6 issues of that, but I'm intrigued. I like it. Yeah.
Well, I read the first 6, which was collected in that trade, and it would probably be a better book in a reread, because I must admit I got the girls confused throughout, and at the very last issue, it really matters what happens to one of them, and I wasn't really sure which one that was until started flicking back through. So
okay,
yeah. Anyway, yes. So that was my week in comics.
Excellent.
My 2 weeks in comics. My period in comics. I had my period in comics.
Right.
Okay.
Gosh.
Well, Matt Clark,
good to be back.
Shall we go down on Durrington Way?
Oh, let's keep it classy. Yes.
Last episode, we talked about delays with Doom Patrol, and we were, you know, Doom Patrol number 4 being pushed back. We said it would be out the last week of this year. That's wrong. It's going to come out on the 18th of January now.
Oh.
So no Doom Patrol in December.
Yeah. I kind of feel responsible. I think they've taken the whole waiting for Doom thing a bit too far.
They're indulging us, aren't they?
In a way, yes.
Yeah. So that is when Doom Patrol number 4 is coming out. Now, that means that Doom Patrol number 5 has been pushed out of January, and that, by the power of the internet, reveal it to me, it will come out on the 8th of February. Okay. 8th of February, or the 2nd of the 8th if you're an American.
Yep.
Which confuses me, because why is it coming out in August? But that's the way they do it.
They're wacky.
And the domino effect continues. So Doom Patrol number 6 is now coming out the 29th of March.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so that's been pushed back a week, a month. A bit. So Yeah, Doom Patrol. So we have no new solicitation this month for number six. But people got excited because there was like, oh, there's a solicitation for Doom Patrol Director's Cut. And it's like, we've already had that, everybody. That was coming out in January, and now it's been pushed back to the 1st of March. Anyway, so we get, hopefully we'll get a new Doom Patrol next month, next year. And then we'll be on the monthly schedule more or less after that.
Yeah. So. I got to say, it will be worth the wait. Going what we had so far, it's going to be worth it. Yeah.
No, I have no problems waiting for this Doom Patrol. It is worth every minute of waiting. And with that, Jared Way put on his blog, his Tumblr, as the kids say. Hey all, I want to take this opportunity to apologize for Doom Patrol issue 4 being late. We put our all into this book, and sometimes it takes longer than we expect. Do you like my Jared Way accent?
It's great. Keep it going, man. Yeah.
Quite similar to my own voice. Anyway, your support and patience is amazing. We are working hard and around the clock to deliver to you the best book possible. We will try and keep you updated on when the issue will ship. Well, we're doing that for them. Anyway, it shouldn't be too much longer. Here's something from us to help hold you over until while we keep it going. On patrol together forever. We have so much cool stuff on the way. And so this was a picture of a character wearing a hood and holding candles, and he's got like candles all over his room.
Ooh.
And one of the cool things is there's like all these band posters and album covers all around him.
Yes, I saw this.
Yeah, but they're all based on DC properties. It's cool. That's so awesome. There's like, yeah, there's Darkseid, there's Crisis, there's a guy looks like Lobo playing guitar with Frag. There's Black Razor, which is a pun on Black Racer Black from Kirbyverse. Sea Devil with a C, but it's like the Sea Devils who from the ocean. Killer Mother, Killer Moth, Zeta Beam, which is what Adam Strange uses to pull back and forwards from Ra, Dial H for Horror. Yeah, anyway, so it's a great little piece of art, and I believe the character wearing the cloak and holding the candle is Lucius, so Sam's son.
Yes, yes. Well, didn't Sam mention that his son had gotten into heavy metal music in like the first issue? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and we believe he's a werekitty. That's based on promo art.
Yes.
Yes. So that I'm looking forward to that. If that's in Doom Patrol number 4, that means we finally see Lucius introduced.
Finally.
Yeah. Yes. Maybe he has a code name. Maybe.
Putty.
Putty. Putty.
Or where Putty?
Where Putty?
Where Putty be? God.
What else has been happening? I've been looking at the Doom Patrol numbers. So the first issue came in at, what did we say, 89,000?
I think that was right,
The second one came in at 37,000 something.
Ooh.
So going down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it was 40 something. Anyway, yeah, it's okay. It's okay right now. Don't panic. This happens. I mean, the first one was goosed by lots of extra issue covers and things. So.
Yes.
So that's why the first one's so high. We will watch it. I mean, if it starts hitting below like 10 copies, we're in serious trouble.
Seriously, yeah.
But they'll be seriously collectible at that point.
But if you've ever been intrigued to check out the new series and you haven't yet, now's a great time to catch up whilst there's the bit of a delay with, you know, issues 4 onwards. So,
yeah.
Yes, and it might sound biased, but we highly recommend them.
We do. We're, you know, it's fair to say that we are fairly focused on the Doom Patrol. And we're kind of attentive to Doom Patrol comics generally.
Yeah.
So you may not have picked that up. Anyway, what else is happening? This is sort of not very Jared Way particularly, but the Doom Patrol omnibus has been solicited. So this is the 1960s collection. So all volume one issues all coming out in one great big fat hardcover. It's fairly expensive. But, you know, if you use your Amazon discounts or if you're a thief, master thief, you might be able to get hold of one. But it's not out till next year, so that's one to look forward to. If DC Comics are listening, and I'm sure they are, it would be good if you put in the Challenges of the Unknown issue that ties into the run. That would be good.
That would be good, yes.
Yeah, and I would even be quite happy to see the Bob Haney Brave and the Bold issue, which had the Flash and the Doom Patrol.
That would
be nice too. But But I get it. It's a Arnold Drake, Bruno Premiani hard collection. So, you know, maybe you don't want to dilute it with those other things. But as a fan of the Doom Patrol, people may not know that I'm a fan of the Doom Patrol. I would appreciate if they were in there. That would, you know.
Okay, two-part question. Did you pick up the Morrison Omnibus? And do you think you'll pick up this new Silver Age Omnibus?
I did not pick up the Morrison Omnibus because I had already got all the trades.
Mm-hmm.
So, I didn't. Money.
True, yeah.
Yeah. And the Silver Age Omnibus, I've got the Showcase Editions. I am sorely tempted, and I think if they threw in the Challenger of the Unknown issue, that would tip me into the buying category.
Okay.
I would go from might be buying it to definitely buying it.
Yeah.
Somewhere, you know, I'm sort of the needle's hovering between those two.
Yeah.
And I believe they are also releasing them in smaller trades at a more reasonable price.
Okay.
But you'll have to buy more of them. So it's probably better economy to buy the Omnibus at this point. Mm.
Yeah. For me, I avoided the Morrison one because I've got all the trade paperbacks and I've got all the single issues. This Silver Age one, though, I'm really tempted.
I mean, a lot of people don't know this. A lot of the time we're looking at these, we're doing our podcast in black and white.
Yes.
So, you know, the whole podcast is in black and white because of what we're reading.
Well, when we do these issues anyway.
These ones, yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, when we do other volumes, they're in colour. The podcast is in colour at that point.
Yes. Yeah. We alternate. But
But today, I mean, it's in Christmas colours for most of this episode, but as soon as we get onto the synopsis for the 60 stuff, it goes to black and white.
That's right, yes. Yep. I'm tempted because, yes, Omnibus, as far as I know, that'll be in colour and that'll be great to have more than one giant book, but I kind of like the original old single issues because of the ads and the other funny, you know, short pages and comic strips they had in like the old My Greatest Adventure ones.
And the prestige of owning those old issues and, you know, lording it over people who don't like me.
Oh, I don't do that. I don't lord it over people. I might talk about owning them a bit, but I don't lord it over anyone, do I? I haven't done that, have I?
No, you haven't done that.
Right. Not yet, anyway. Just wait till I complete the set. Then you'll never hear the end of it.
Damn it.
Oh, dear.
Well, that's probably it for going down in Darrington Way, but I think I might hear some ticking at this point.
Yes, I can too. And look over there behind you, Paul. It's the Doom Clock.
What? Ah.
Ah.
Startled.
So looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had was issue 3 of volume 6 by Wayne Darrington and co. So it's been 6 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. Jeez, this is like, you know, back when it was before volume 6 launched. As Paul said before, issue 4 is due out on the 18th of January in 2017. So that's about 4 weeks away. So the waiting, it's come back to us. The last appearance of the Patrol as a team was 1 year and 19 weeks ago in two different comics, All-Star Section 8 number 3 and Justice League United number 12. But we should have the team back in action, all together, united fantastically, in issue 6 of the new volume. So,
or sooner.
We'll see. But this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale the 22nd of December 1987 with a cover date of April 1988, premieres 75 US cents, was Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issue Number 7 from Cole Pupperberg? No, from Paul Kupperberg and Eric Larson. God, I'm so rusty at this. This issue saw the younger team members, Karma, Lodestone and Hot Hands, go out to a nightclub, while the senior members of the team were off in Nicaragua doing something with, you know, those other guys.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the night turned out bad when the teens run into the metallic assassin known as Shrapnel. Yay. Not really yay. We covered this issue and issue 8 of the series way back in episode 33 of the show from September of 2015. So you can go and check that out for more details. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Oh, I'm Diablo Frank, and I've been a fan of The Amazing Amazon for my entire life. To be truthful, I'm not a typical fan of the Paradise Island set. I'm not big on mythology, and I'm highly critical of the most popular Themyscira stories. I like it when Wonder Woman loses her powers and hangs out with a tiny blind Asian martial arts master named I Ching, or when she works at Taco Bell and helps collect child support for a co-worker from a deadbeat mafioso dad, or when she rides around on kangaroo ponies from outer space and is a little too into bondage and spanking for the squares. Wonder Woman is great, but I really miss Diana Prince, the reminder that the heroine feels and fails and bleeds like the rest of us. That's why I call my podcast about her Diana Prince Wonder Woman, because I like to remember there's a woman behind all that wonder, and I'd like to talk about her if you care to listen on iTunes, Shout Engine, and the Internet Archive.
This week on Doom's Planning, we are returning to the 60s and going back to the Silver Age, and we're looking at Doom Patrol Volume 1, issues 119 and 120. Oh, the penultimate issue. Oh my God. dearie me. So these were both done by Arnold Drake with the words, and Bruno Premiani with the art, and Murray Boltonoff doing the edits. And I'll be taking us through issue 119 first, which was cover dated May-June of 1968, but went on sale, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, on March 21st, 1968, for a mere 12 cents, for a whopping 32 wow. pages. And this cover, it's kind of, wow.
It's trippy.
It's trippy, yeah, and it's got the words Victims of the Mind Stealer, and this the patrol sort of strapped down on these chairs and this weird kind of trippy figure looming above them. It's out there.
It is out there.
And I like that it made a very short appearance in the Batman Brave and the Bold episode, The Last Patrol, as well, when it was introing the team amongst all the guys. Yeah, it was like a 2 second shot, but it was very cool. Yeah.
Nice catch, Mike.
Yeah, I'm up there for thinking. Yeah. Anyway, shall we get into it?
Let's.
In the Shadow of the Great Guru. And we open with Cliff Steele, a.k.a. Robot Man. He's out in the city having a stroll. And he's singing to himself. Right? Krashny, 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 he sings. He's so oblivious as to what's going on as he strolls that he walks out into traffic and is hit by a truck.
Oh, dear.
Everyone take
That's what happens in Volume 6.
Yes.
Well, without the singing.
Not the singing, not yet. Despite a mangled leg and a battered arm dangling from his shoulder socket, Cliff somehow has the energy to make it back to DPHQ, where he crashes through the wall, much to the surprise of his teammates. "I'll kill you for that," cries Larry Trainer, aka Negative Man, but Robot Man simply replies, "Kill if you must, I shall only reply with love." Fearing Cliff has lost his mind, Niles Call to the Chief calls for some urgent repairs. Later, the team check in on Cliff in his room, only to discover him worshipping before a shrine, oriental in appearance, with Robot Man chanting along to a tape of Eastern music. Chief realizes that it's a threnody, a repetitious lament for the dead, or a word sound used to focus concentration. Negman makes a fist and complains that Cliff's bugging him and he'll give him something to really wail about. Larry's so angry in this issue.
I know.
It's hilarious.
It's like, a pacifist, kill them!
Yeah, exactly. As the rest of the team bicker about how to deal with Cliff's sudden change, he comes to and tells them that he's actually finally found peace in his life, and he will never lift his hand in violence again. Of course, Larry decides to call his bluff and unleashes a negative being straight at him. So with a mighty ba-womp and ba-woing, the negative man being beats the heck out of Cliff, but Robot Man still refuses to fight back, instead forgiving Larry for his actions. This just enrages Larry even further, so he starts beating Cliff about the head. Thankfully, good old Rita comes in to try and break up the fight, as she usually does. Cliff eventually reveals that he's found this peace thanks to the Great Guru, and the team immediately begin to leave to meet this guru. But as they're on their way out, their departure is interrupted by the appearance of Madame Rouge. Now, when we last saw Rouge, back in issue 118, or episode 72, you know, the episode that had Fractures as a guest and had that issue that had Videx, the so-called Monarch of Light, you know, take on the patrol. That was a great episode. Go check it out. Anyway, Rouge's last appearance had her just about to leave Niles on the team, but obviously he's talked her into staying. partly because they had feelings for each other, and but also because the Brotherhood of Evil would probably come after her for betraying them. Anyway, she wants to go check out the Guru with them, but Niles convinces her to remain home for her own protection. Okay. Got all that?
Yeah.
Good. So the patrol head to the Continental Hotel, where the Guru is residing in the penthouse suite. And the team are immediately suspicious of a so-called Guru living in such a swanky joint, but are soon gobsmacked by the immense stature of the man Cliff introduces as his Guru, Yaromichi Rama Yogi. God, that's a mouthful. And isn't this dude built, Paul?
He's a beast of a man.
I think he's almost on par with Vandal Savage in appearance.
Oh, well, if I was rocking that bot, I'd be wearing the loincloth too.
Ah, well, new year soon, you know, new goals. Anyway, as the team begin to question Cliff and the Guru further about his teachings, he appears to be quite sincere and legitimate. And they almost...
Even though he looks like the creepiest person on earth.
Oh, yeah, he's definite creepy looking. And they almost all start to think that the Guru is a swell guy. Well, almost, because Larry isn't buying it at all. To the point where, after leaving with the team and being scolded by Chief for his lack of tolerance, Negman storms off, but he secretly heads back to the penthouse to investigate further. And it's at this point he's suddenly attacked and knocked out cold by a disciple of the Guru. Negman comes to, strapped to a chair, with a huge sphere dubbed the Mind Eraser behind him, and the Guru before him, saying just as he rendered Robot Man useless through love, he'll destroy Larry through fear. Okay. And soon Negman is victim to the Mind Eraser's effects. A projected image of a nice, harmless cat is changed with a green-coloured filter, and soon Larry is terrified of a tiger leaping towards him off the screen. The Guru comes to Larry, calming him down, and then offers to show him another pretty picture, this time of a canary. But damn it, that Guru, he pulls the same trick. And Larry's now horrified by a giant condor coming for him. That's really some, you know, fast-working machine to have.
Did
Larry,
you say condom or
thing.
Condor?
I said condor.
Oh, not condom.
I guess you could be horrified by a giant condom coming for you, but it's
green.
A condor.
Giant green.
Yeah, it was originally a canary. Now it's a condor, oh, okay. Right?
Condor.
Condor.
Clarity is important sometimes.
Yes, yes. I shall try to enunciate better so we don't have any giant condoms coming for us, Paul. Anyway, the Guru calms Larry down again and lets him leave, not knowing that the Guru has plans next for Elastigirl. Speaking of Elastigirl, we cut over to Dayton Manor, where Steve Dayton, aka Mento, the fifth richest man in the world, and his adopted son, Gar, aka Beast Boy, are in the middle of training exercises. Steve's using his Mento helmet to lift a 500-pound weight, while Gar transforms into a gorilla, grabs and throws a weight at Steve, who deflects it back and it lands on Gar's toes. Classic Steve and Gar comedy. Anyway, a butler knocks at the door of the gym and tells Dayton he has a visitor, and it's Harvey Jackson, who's the father of Jill Jackson, the girl that Gar met back in issue 118/episode 72. Go check it out. Good stuff.
Now, this is the first appearance of Harvey Jackson. I just want to point that out for the collectors out there.
Yes. It's a big moment. Because, you know, we only just saw Jill in the previous issue for the first time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all happening with the Jackson clan.
Yeah.
Mr. Jackson's come to tell Gar that Jill can't come on her date tonight because she needs to study, what with it being college entrance preparation and all. But of course, Gar gets his chip on his shoulder and accuses Jackson of breaking off the date because of the colour of Gar's skin. An argument breaks out and everyone storms off, though Rita comes to Steve, having overheard everything. They worry that, you know, whether or not they should do something about Gar's skin, but Rita refuses to put him through any treatments that Steve suggests, and she wants him to learn to not run away from what he is, except who he is. Very Doom Patrol-ish. Anyway, very serious stuff. And we're left wondering, how will Rita find a way to help poor Gar? Oh, wait, she can go and speak with the Guru and seek his wisdom.
Oh, he seems trustworthy.
Yeah. Instead, the Guru drops some hypnotic herbs into an incense burner in the room and convinces Rita that she is a 2-year-old child. Even creepier, he confines her to a giant playpen filled with toys, and as a shrill note plays, exactly E above high C for the musicians out there, two of his henchmen, disguised as Robot Man and Negative Man, come and torment two-year-old Rita. With the trigger implanted in her mind, the Guru has now effectively booby-trapped our three patrollers. That can't be good.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Later, our heroes are rushing to stop an art heist at a museum when calamity strikes. A flash of green light turns Negman into a coward terrified of everything, and a high musical note sends Rita into a murderous rampage against the other two. And Robot Man stands there trying to figure out what's going on, but he's still not fighting back, because he's a lover, not a fighter now. Oh, Cliff. As the fight gets worse, Larry finally summons up the courage to fight Rita, just as she's about to detach Cliff's head completely from his body. Take a sip, maybe, because his head's still attached by all the cables. So a sip.
A gulp.
A gulp, okay, a gulp. But suddenly they all stop and come to their senses somehow, and Cliff says he's got an itch to clout somebody finally. And they realize that the Guru must have been behind all these recent quirks, so the team race onwards towards the museum, and of course they find the Guru and his henchmen there about to abscond with a jade dragon statue. So Larry and Rita take out the minions while Cliff takes on the Guru, crying, "This'll part your whiskers." Now that's the Cliff we know and love. And just as Cliff gains the upper hand of the fight, the Guru suddenly turns into a cloud of smoke, much to everyone's surprise. And drifting away, he exclaims, "I go now into the cosmos, but my true work is complete, as you will soon see." Troubled by these words, the patrol race back to their headquarters to tell the chief, and they find him sitting there in his office, just sitting there. And he explains that Madame Rouge has finally left him. And at this point, a transmission appears on a giant monitor in the communication room. Finally, a giant monitor. It's been ages. And on the screen is Madame Rouge. With an evil grin on her face, she reveals that the Guru wasn't after the patrol at all, but had actually been sent by the Brotherhood of Evil to win her back. See, she had gone to see the Guru of her own free will to gain help with the new life that Niles had given her, but in doing so, she's reverted to her evil side. She's realized that she's now her own master. She doesn't need the Brotherhood at all. She will be gathering her own forces to come after Niles. And she signs off with a warning, "I will not rest until you are dead. Sweet dreams, my love." Did you like my Madame Rouge?
That was chilling.
The issue ends with the patrol standing there stunned by this revelation, and Niles departs, and we leave him sitting there in a darkened room by himself, holding an empty bottle of Parisian perfume and looking very sad.
Yeah.
Paul, what did you think of issue 119?
Well, it's a mixed bag, isn't it?
Mm.
At first, I mean, I get fairly uncomfortable because it seems to be playing under the 60s. What was happening in pop culture, particularly with bands like the Beatles and that, where everyone was getting a guru and going to hang out with the guru. And you worry about, is this a, you know, accurate depiction of, you know, some sort of religious ideology or things like that? But then it turns out it's a supervillain and it's all cool. We're cool with that. I mean, the Doom Patrol, they get played as dupes in this, don't they?
Don't they just? God.
Yeah. I mean, Cliff being the first to fall, that's just... Oh, Cliff.
Oh, Cliff.
Yeah, and being overcome by the power of love and not being able to throw a punch.
Yeah.
Which I love that it enrages Larry. Like, Larry just wants to kill Cliff because Cliff is peaceful now. It's,
yeah.
Interesting, yeah. Interesting, very empathetic approach there from Larry.
Mm, yeah.
Other highlight to me, Jill's dad, when Harvey he Jackson. Comes and visits.
Big moment in the patrol history, yeah.
Yeah, he says to Steve, the fifth richest man in the world, Gar's adopted dad, he said, "You watch that boy, he thinks the whole world hates him. He's sick, a regular paramecium." Is that paramecium's back? I mean, I think the only time I've ever read the word paramecium was in Doom Patrol 86, maybe?
It was a very early one. It was like one of our first episodes that we discussed that word.
And it's one of the things that Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man first turns into, a giant paramecium.
Yes.
You know? And, you know, I was very amused by the word paramecium, so it's great to see it making a comeback.
Finally, after all this time, you know, right near the start and now right near the end, you know?
Yes. Symmetry. I believe episode 9 of our podcast is where you can first hear our delight at the word paramecium.
Yeah. But
I mean, there's some interesting stuff happening in the art. Like, the art is getting more creative and spacious, and the grid is starting to get more angles in it.
True.
It looks like Bruno Premiani's getting more confident. But I mean, the guru is the freakiest looking guy. Like, he, you know, if you've ever stared at someone with, you know, raise your eyelids as high as you can and stared at them and grin maniacally, you know, you're not half as creepy as he looks.
Yeah, he's a bit of a worry.
He's a stranger to blinking, I would say.
I would say he looks like he needs some sleep as well. His eyes look a little bit bloodshot almost. So.
But I like the twist that this is just a plot to release Madame Rouge from Niles's from her good side. All of this is just a distraction so the Brotherhood of Evil can get her back in the mindset that they want. But they push her too far because she's now...
And it backfires, She's on her own now.
She doesn't need them. She doesn't need anyone. She just wants revenge and mayhem.
That can't end well.
Yeah, but she's dressed particularly severe in this comic throughout. So her collars are getting very high. She's wearing the pearls. She's got the hair and the very tight matronly bun. You know, she doesn't look relaxed.
Yeah. I'm a little bit creeped out by the treatment of Rita by the guru.
Yeah.
Reverting her to an infant and then tormenting her with his minions dressed up as Larry and Cliff. That was a little bit extra creepy. You know, the fake robot man comes up and gives her a lollipop and he goes, yes, it tastes bad. I wanted to poison you. And it's like, wow, that's just some pretty dark stuff there.
And the guru gives her like a cuddle at one point while she's in baby mode. Yeah. That's a bit ick.
Yeah.
But and when she attacks the patrol, she actually loses, like her body forms, she's twisting her head back around the wrong way and bending, contorting in ways that aren't normal.
No, not for her.
Yeah, it's like she's really losing control of everything.
So you're right. It is a bit of a mixed bag, and I guess, you know, no one likes to see their heroes being duped into something like that. But I'd actually forgotten the reveal and the twist at the end of this, where it was all about sending Rouge back to her evil side.
Yeah.
So that was... And poor Niles sitting there in the very last panel, you know. Poor old guy.
Yeah. And what's up with the guru just turning into smoke and going off to be in the cosmos at the end?
I can't recall if we ever see him again. So
I do not think we do.
No. Maybe Gerard Way will do something about that.
It's just sitting there on the shelf, Gerard. Yeah. Grab it.
Bring him back and have him play mind games with all the new people on the team.
Yeah. Gurus are in, aren't they? Still?
Sure. Yeah. Why not? Everything old's new again, you know? It was good, but it's an okay story. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, Paul, take us through the details of issue 120, the penultimate issue of volume 1.
This is issue 120. It has a cover by Jack Sparling. I don't think we've ever had a Doom Patrol cover by Jack Sparling.
No.
It's some strong graphic design there, as we see that Cliff is a crumbled, broken down, fractured mess.
I think a lot of people are going to get really drunk if they play the Cliff drinking game.
Yeah, it's a bad episode for that. Yes, and the other members of the Doom Patrol have their backs to Cliff. They look sad and mournful, whereas Cliff is imploring them, help me, Chief, somebody, anybody, help! And it's then we get the title of the comic, The Rage of the Wrecker. Anyway, it opens with action straight away as Larry and Cliff fly through space on their latest mission. apparently all the satellites have vanished except for one, which looks suspiciously like a moon lander and a re-entry craft jammed together. But it's a satellite, apparently. And as they close in on the last of these man-made celestial objects, they're surprised by the sudden appearance of a missile streaking towards the satellite. With seconds to spare, Larry and Cliff make space tracks and use their jetpacks to skedaddle before the satellite goes kaboom. Strangely, they are unsurprised by the sound effects in the soundless vacuum of space. But this is clearly attributable to comic book science, which is related to sci-fi movie science in this instance. Yes. So someone has now officially destroyed every last satellite by every country. And down in Midway City, the chief watches Larry on his big-ass monitor. And he says, you two must find out who's behind this and why. There's no time to waste. So, bossy. Cliff suddenly spots a possible answer, and the title page reveals a massive clump of satellites, missiles, capsules, and space junk. And the chief calls it, like he sees it, it's a Sargasso of space. But who is behind it? Suddenly, the spacefaring duo are under fire from the space mass, but they use their rocket packs to dodge and weave. Cliff decides to bust an entranceway into the clump, but the air that escapes from inside blasts them, tumbling off into the depths of space. Their rocket packs are too weak to slow their roll, and there's no George Clooney to coach them. But luckily, Larry remembers that he is a being of negative energy inside him, and Negative Man bursts forth and tows Cliff, who in turn tows Larry's unconscious form back to the chief's handy flying saucer, which I remember seeing in issue 116 when the chief impersonated an alien called Selen.
Oh, yes. Nice callback. Well done.
Yeah, good to see the flying saucer again. Finally. Anyway, our two heroes retreat until they can better understand the threat. Meanwhile, at stately Dayton Manor, Gar is dressed to kill and heading out for a date with Jill Jackson. Apparently, Jill and her mum have worked on her father, and Gar is once more welcome. With Gar out for the night, Steve and Rita wonder what they could get up to with no teenager in the house. Surprisingly, they decide to head out and are soon bopping in a nightclub.
Right.
I love that Steve says, go press the miniskirt, Rita. Anyway. Having safely returned to Earth, Cliff and Larry are examining the problem with the chief. He mentions a transistor factory burning down in Tokyo, a computer plant blown up in Illinois, and an automated refinery in Saudi Arabia, an electric plant in Siberia, all destroyed. All this clearly adds up to a war against all advanced machines. That's a bit of a leap of logic, but I like it. Cliff is skeptical, but he tempts fate by saying the villain will target him because he's an advanced machine. And suddenly, Cliff's advanced ceramic metal fractures, crumbles, and shatters, leaving him in tragic shape. Take a drink.
Take a couple of drinks, actually.
Yeah. With what's left of Cliff's head preserved in an emergency life support unit, Niles takes Larry to a secret laboratory with a sonic lock, so he whistles Beethoven's Ninth. And we are all seeing the chief's secret reject robot repository.
Yeah, that's some interesting designs there.
Yeah, and so we behold, the chief shows Larry the rocket robot, the grasshopper robot, and the flamethrower tank robot. Plus, I'm so excited to see the stunning return of RA2, Robot Assistant 2, who the chief used to surgically remove a bomb from his own chest in issue 88.
Wow, another nice callback. Yeah, it's been ages since we've seen him.
And we covered that in Waiting for Doom number 9. Mm. And do you remember what the chief did to that robot? Stuck a gun to his head and blew his head off.
Yeah, it was.
But he got better off. Chief. Thank you for saving me, my trusted robot assistant. I will now kill you.
Blam.
Yeah, but it's good to see RA2 got better, or the chief repaired him at some point. Yeah. I love RA2. He always looks surprised. He's got no eyelids and great big eyes. Wow.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Gar Logan has left Jill's house, and Jill's on his with him, and apparently he's turned into a badass because he's wearing a motorcycle jacket and he's riding on a hog. He's motorbike. He's not turned into a pig.
Now, that would be a memorable date for Jill.
And he and Jill are out to party some more. So they go, and they, by amazing coincidence, they end up at the same dance joint that Steve and Rita are at.
Oh, awkward.
Awkward. But they miss each other. It's like one of those comedies of errors where one walks in and the others walk out the other door for a breather. Anyway, Meanwhile, a quick flying saucer ride, and Cliff and Larry are back in space, except this time Cliff's brain is inside the grasshopper robot, and we will call him the Cliffhopper at this point.
Right, yep.
So they have approached the space mass. Merry space mass, everybody. And their mission is to get a photo of the villain who destroyed advanced technology so the chief can identify this scoundrel. Because Cliff, well, the chief knows every single scientist who goes evil because he usually is the reason they go evil.
It's usually his fault somehow. Yeah.
Yes. And so they land on the space mass and they are soon under attack from two humanoid aliens and they surrender so they can use the age-old line, take us to your leader. And they are brought before the man the aliens called the Lord of the New World, who we call the Wrecker, according to the title of the comic, which they never use in the comic. Mm. And the man, who is a human from Earth, is in charge of New World Island, which is his satellite island. Right. And he is as dedicated to the destruction of the Earth as any alien. And he recognizes Larry and Cliff, even though Cliff is in a new body, as members of the Doom Patrol. And he invites them to join him in destroying the modern world. Tempting offer. Yeah. Cliff and Larry ask for a minute to think it over, and the despot orders Larry searched by his alien underling, who he calls Dr. Slivky, and Larry is like, what, the famous mathematician Dr. Slivky?
I don't quite get Larry knowing that. Chief, maybe. Rita, maybe. Chief, definitely. Rita, maybe.
How famous does a mathematician have to get become for people to just spot the name? How many famous mathematicians alive today do you know?
None.
There's the beautiful mind, but I don't know his name.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, the other alien is identified as Professor Tyneborn, and they take Larry's camera. He can't get a photo, but they leave him his cigarettes. Phew, he can have a smoke. Anyway, Cliffhopper attacks and recovers the camera, but the leader of the New World Island, the Wrecker, pulls a lever, and Cliff and Larry are mobbed by alien lackeys. They shake off the foes, but Cliffhopper loses his legs to some well-aimed laser fire, and the snappy line, don't worry about me, mechanical man, worry about you.
Ooh. Also, take a drink.
Cliff and Larry get the hell out of there. So they jet back over to the flying saucer, where Larry quickly swaps Cliff's brain into the other robot, which is the sort of rocket robot, which is pretty cool looking.
It looks a bit like a robotic shark with arms.
Yeah. Little submarine sharky arm thing. Mm. And Cliff flies out and he tackles all the minions who are attacking with little rocket packs and he slams into them all and pushes them back. But then a laser comes out of New World Island and shoots his rocket body in half. But Larry's there zooming around, so he grabs the half with the brain in it and takes it back and then he swaps it. But the chief is in touch and he says, I've identified it and it's Morton Keller, the artist who died 6 months ago. It's an artist. It's not a scientist.
And I agree with Larry when he says, huh?
Anyway, so they say, we've got to force the Wrecker down. So Cliff swaps into the flamethrower tank robot body, Andy, and then drives the tank through space, it looks like.
Yep. Of course. Comic book science.
And starts melting New World Island. And then he swaps again into RA2, the surprised robot. And they grab Morton Keller and, Cliff holds him over his head. And then, but Larry has more information. He says, you're Harvey Keller, twin brother of the artist Morton, who was killed in a car crash. And he's murdered, you mean? Murdered by a data professor. But Larry, this is a story that needs explaining straight away as soon as we hear it.
Mm.
And Larry says, wrong, it's true. Under emergency conditions, the hospital's electronic records did goof, causing your brother to receive the wrong blood type. But x-rays show he'd have died within minutes anyway.
How does Larry know all this?
I don't know. He just knows it. And Harvey Keller he's satisfied. If you can prove what you say, then I've wasted my life.
It's like, God.
Wow. So your brother died and it was because of a computer. So you declared war on all technology and made a satellite space station based on all the satellites that you've attacked and stolen.
Yep. Perfect sense.
Perfect. Then, meanwhile, the nightclub, someone is trying to move in on Jill. and attacks Gar. And then Gar gets into a fight and he turns into a goat and kicks this dude. And then Rita and Steve walk in and they see what's happening. And then there's a great big full-on brawl.
There's so many bodies in this fight scene. It's hilarious.
And Rita, Steve, Jill, and Gar are all punching people in the face and hitting people with sticks. And it's just, it's quite extreme.
I love how Steve and Rita went to the dance, you know, in their discotheque clothes. And when they come back in after they, you know, went out for a breather, Steve somehow got his Mentor helmet on him. Like, did he take it and leave it in the car or something and notice there was a fight? Oh, I'll just duck back to the car and pick up the helmet and go back in and fight.
Yes, I love the panel of Jill Holt sitting on top of a guy, hitting him on the head with a shoe repeatedly. Yeah. Anyway, and they come out of there, and their clothes are torn, they're all dishevelled, they've got dirt all over their faces, and and they meet the rest of the Doom Patrol outside, who happen to be driving past, and they all like high five over street fighting or club fighting. And Rita says, "Oh, it's much more safer in the Doom Patrol." And everyone says, ha, 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 ha. And then the picture freezes and the credits roll.
Yep.
So, what did we think of this one?
It's certainly the wackier of the two issues that we've covered tonight. It's a bit more fun. The story with the leader of the New World doesn't make a lot of sense. But, you know, it was still kind of funny. And seeing Cliff's brain get shoved into different robot bodies was good fun too. So, yeah.
Good for the action figure collection.
Oh, if only. If
yeah.
Only.
But I love the art in this one. When Steve and Rita hit the dance floor, that is the rockingest panel. It's like something out of the Peter Sellers movie, The Party.
Yes.
Birdie yeah. Num-num. Anyway, yeah. And just the art in this, the fashion and everything. Like Gar, when he's dressed up to go out, he looks really well-dressed, and he's got an earring suddenly.
Oh, he's a wild one.
Yeah. And the way Cliff's body breaks down, it's spectacular. So fantastic Premiani art in this. And, you know, the panel layouts and everything, like there's a lot more close-ups on things.
Yeah, yeah. Like that fight scene in the club, that's just great. The amount of action in that alone. But there was a lot of action too in outer space with Larry and Cliff. It was quite hectic.
Yeah. And things like when Keller is ranting at them, the panel just zooms in onto his eyes. It's very cinematic. And I was thinking, is he hypnotizing us? And it's just, you know, dramatic effect by Bruno there.
Mm.
Yeah. But I there were a few things I didn't understand, like why are the other scientists there dressed as aliens and helping?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe, you know, they looked at his eye as well and, you know, zoomed in on his eye and he was just very convincing that, you know, technology bad, you know.
Well, it's like Harvey Keller's putting together some satellite space station. Do you want to be a part of that? Like, well, I'm a professor and you're a mathematician.
That would be brilliant. Neat. Yes, let's go and join in on that. Oh.
And wear these alien masks and dress up as aliens. It all makes sense. But I forgot to say that the camera was actually hidden inside the cigarettes, which was why. Yeah. The old camera in the cigarettes trick.
Oh, bit of spy technology there for you.
But, it's a great issue, and Gar looks like Peter Pan in some of the panels where he's fighting. It's quite stylish.
Yeah, yeah. I think this one was a lot more fun than 119. 119 was just a bit too creepy with the guru and his mind games, whereas this one, it's a lot of fun, and you've kind of got... a bit of an adventure and a bit of a madcap night out for the others. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a romp. It's sort of a last romp before things... the next issue is the last of Volume 1. So, yeah. And things get heavy. Things get super heavy.
Yeah, don't they just? Yeah, this... I won't say anything other than that the final issue was kind of groundbreaking at the time. For what happened in it. But we'll get to that next episode. Yeah. But yeah, I think these two issues, both pretty good. 120, a bit more enjoyable. 119, a little bit creepy.
Yeah. All right, Doomsplained.
Doomsplained and done, dude.
Put the Doomsplaining stamp on it.
Donk.
Awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Hi, I'm Tim from Cord Industries, the Blue Beetle blog. I'm here to tell you about an exciting new addition to the Silver and Gold family of podcasts. The show is Beatlemania, and it focuses on what is arguably one of the greatest superheroes in all of comics history, Blue Beetle. From the adventures of Dan Garrett the cop in the 1930s to Dan Garrett the archaeologist in the 1960s. From everyone's favorite Ted Kord to the more recent adventures of Jaime Reyes, we'll be covering the entire legacy of the Blue Beetle. And I won't be doing it alone. Joining me for this epic journey through the lives of the Blue Beetle will be Jay from the Silver and Gold Podcast. Together, we'll be discussing, reviewing, and celebrating the awesomeness of all of the Beatles. Beatlemania, coming soon to sngpod.com and cordindustries.blogspot.com.
So it's a bit of a packed mailbag of doom for this episode. So we'll start with some random stuff we got. We got an iTunes review. We got two, in fact, from Fabio Arbad, our mate Arbad. And he's put us into the Brazilian iTunes store with a Portuguese review, which I cannot read. I'm ashamed to say. And one in English, which he put in the Dutch store. So that's pretty amazing. Mm. And he said, we get 5 stars. And he says, fun and weird. That's us. And he said, one of the funniest comic podcasts around, about one of the weirdest supergroups of them all, the Doom Patrol. All eras of the comic covered, including the brand new 2016 Gerard Way, Nick Darrington run. Both the Doom Patrol comic and Waiting for Doom podcast, highly recommended. So... thank you for that, Arbad.
Thanks, Arbad. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for telling us about them. We would never have known if you hadn't told us. We see Australian iTunes generally.
And that's it.
That's it. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks, iTunes.
I believe you can log into different ones, but who has time for that? So if you give us anyone out there gives us an iTunes review, just tell us and we'll zoom in on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we also got an email from Darren Sutherland. And he said, hi, guys, I'm an episode behind as usual, but listening to episode 77, I just heard Paul mention the question he tweeted to the North Carolina Comic Con about Doom Patrol regarding Mr. 103 becoming Mr. 118. And I remember the question was read during the panel, but sadly, I don't remember what the answer was.
Oh.
Forgive me.
Oh, Darren.
I did a search to see if it was on YouTube, and it's not. So. I'd love to know the answer to my question. Anyway, but he did say, it gives away one of the gifts we picked up for all three of you. That's me, you, and Doug. Doug Sibby. But I did want to let you know that we got Doom Patrol number 1 signed for each of you by Nick Darrington and Tamara Bonvillain. We did mention that we were getting the issue signed for our friends, the hosts of Waiting for Doom podcast. That got enthusiastic smiles and comments and a sense of recognition on their part. We got a sense of recognition.
Finally.
I recognize those words that you were saying. Anyway, so they seem to be aware of the podcast, so good luck getting some future interviews. Oh. I wish we could have gotten Gerard Way to sign the issues as well, but he was only signing for those who bought the convention VIP pass, which was $300.
Ouch.
Ow.
Ooh. Wow.
Good luck. Anyway, a bit outside our price range. I hope you all like the covers you end up with. We bought a set for all the covers and got all of them signed. Can I just say, I received these in the mail this week and they're brilliant. So I got the Babs Tarr cover and you got the Jaime Hernandez cover.
Excellent.
Neither of which we own.
Yes.
Yes.
Win-win.
Yes, and the other thing they gave us was a beautiful print by Richard Case of the Doom Patrol that he, one of his signed prints.
Thanks so much, guys. That's really very much appreciated. You didn't have to do that, but it means a lot to us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I have to explain to my family, oh, I'm getting mail from my fans.
Yeah, it is. We've made it.
Darren goes on, also regarding the film festival you mentioned, I wanted to explain that the Comic Quest Film Festival is part of the NC Comic Con every year. The rather small Durham Convention Centre is attached to the historic Carolina Theatre, which is a cinema specialising in independent films and features retro film festivals throughout the year. Ruth and I regularly see lots of classic films there. That's Ruthie's wife. And the Comic Quest Film Festival is held during the weekend of NC Comic Con every year, and your ticket to the convention includes a couple of tickets for the films, and tickets for additional films can be purchased at the box office. The festival is definitely a highlight of the convention. In the past, we've seen great movies like the 1966 Batman, Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers, The Phantom, and many others during the Conquest Festival, and this year we saw The Adventures of Tintin and At the Earth's Core. Ooh. I think they are the... Were they the Cave Carson selection?
Sounds like it, if you're at the Earth's Core, yeah.
Yes. Also, I wanted to thank Paul for talking about Cave Carson. We are really enjoying that series as well. Sorry I didn't hear the episode earlier, or I would have gotten that signed as well. The writer, John Rivera, was at NC Comic Con. Sorry, Paul. Take care, all. Darren. Oh, thank you, Darren.
Thanks, Darren.
Actually, I should mention their latest Warlord Worlds. How do you make Warlord Worlds better? So this is, they focus on Mike Grell comics, and they've started focusing on Mike Grell's Legion work as well. And they put Dr. Ange and Jeff Mesner from the Geek Brain podcast on the show to talk about Legion of Superheroes with them.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. So they're doing Green Arrow, they're doing Warlord, which I'm a recent convert to Warlord now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so good stuff. Excellent. So fantastic podcast. They also do the Xenophiles, something. It's too many words in that sentence.
Yeah,
big yeah. They do. It's about Cadillacs and Dinosaurs by Mark Schultz. And they do Trekker Talk, which is about the comic Trekker by Ron Rannell, who is also a Doom Patrol artist, who we will discuss in the future.
Yes.
Oh, anyway, sorry. Off the track.
A little bit.
And we also got an email from Dr. Ange about our last episode where we talked about the Brave and the Bold issues with the Legion and the Doom Patrol teaming up. Anyway, and so here we go from Ange. I'm a bit late in correspondence, but I have a very good reason. Despite starring two of my favorite teams, the Legion and the Doom Patrol, I don't have these issues. So I cannot specifically comment on when in Legion history I think these stories are taking place. To be honest, I don't even know they existed before listening to the show, and they sound like an absolute hoot. And I even like the cover treatments, mirroring the two more established teams with the two inept ones. But you do talk about one topic you know, which is a raw nerve for me, J. Michael Straczynski. As you know, I have vowed never to spend any more money on anything his name is attached to. So even if I saw these books in a quarter bin, I would need to move on. That said, I do have the issue where Zatanna and Wonder Woman take Batgirl out dancing, and I think that issue is wonderful. Given your thoughts on this issue, I wonder if an anthology title like Brave and the Bold might be best outlet for JMS. These stories are brief and usually can't rock the continuity boat that much. It is when JMS decides to shred a character and then leaves on plot mid-shred that irks me. Take Superman's Grounded, for instance, or when he simply can't meet a deadline, so books just stops, like Supreme Power, for instance. Ugh, now I'm all riled up again about JMS. Why must you pick this scab? I want the fanboy wound to heal, finally.
Wow, rough.
Yeah. Part of the Hippocratic Oath is to swear off JMS comics, apparently, as well.
Yeah, fair call.
Yeah. Yeah. And over on the My Greatest Adventure 80.blogspot, we also had another comment about the last episode, and they quoted me when I said one of those super nerds from the Legion of Super bloggers could probably tell us when this takes place based on their costumes and hairstyles, and did and done, son. And this is from PBLF SDA, who runs a Doom Patrol blog called LGC. Anyway, the link, go to My Greatest Adventure, you can see the links there. And it's amazing. He talks about the Legion, how they look in it, and he also does a post where he basically unpacks the story, telling it from the point of view of the time bubble.
Oh, God. Wow.
So going deep with the knowledge there. So yeah. Thanks for that. And he, we finally get to the question of the week, which is I asked, what's something cool that's as old as you are? And so PBLF SDA said, I forgot about the question. Reed Richards and Sue Storm's marriage is as old as I am. Their wedding went on sale the week I was born.
Huh. There you go.
All right. And we got some other answers, didn't we, Mike?
We sure did.
Yes. So we heard first from Mark Gray, finally getting his act together. And he said, here are four books published the day I was born, and that month's Doom Patrol. So he was born the month that the Animal Vegetable Mineral Man issue came out.
Nice.
Nice. Tiny. And he put in a few other old comics like Superman and Action Comics and Wonder Woman and Hawkman.
Mm, nice choice. Nice choice.
Nice choice.
We also heard from Bob Gartlin-Ellis, and he gave us a picture of a Budweiser 40, I think it is.
He was born in 1876.
Right. There we go.
Well done.
Mm.
We heard from Rift, who said, wow, there's going to be a lot of dinosaurs in the wheel, Francis, this week, Wilfred. So, thank you.
Yep. We heard from We Term Eve Chili Tank, a.k.a. Kevin, a.k.a. at Ostrakis One, and he gave us a picture of The Muppet Show.
Cool. Nice.
Nice.
It's cool. Mm-hmm. We heard from Cash Flag, a.k.a. Al, and he's at Reba02 on Twitter, and he sent us a picture of Jaws, the Jaws poster.
Nice.
Oh, 76?
So he's the same. No, I say 75.
75.
Because that was one I was going to run with, but I can't now.
Yeah,
Dead Horse at Registratus on the Twitter said, my car.
Oh,
right.
It's an old car. Or a young car, I don't know.
Yeah.
Could be a 10-year-old car for all I know. We heard from Dr. Pudgy on Twitter, who's Dr. Dead Morris Pudgy, and he said the Hep B vaccine was invented the year I was born, not much else.
Wow.
That is cool, though.
That is cool, yes.
Super cool.
Mm. Coffee and Comics Blog at Coffee Comics Blog said, same age as me, The Empire Strikes Back.
Nice. Hey, nice. Ryan Daly said, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Cool.
Hey, Ryan.
Moby One at Shmoby One said, always thought it was cool that the animal's House of the Rising Sun was released in my birth year. You can work the rest out.
We choose not to.
Ooh, cold.
We heard from FKA Jason, who's FKA Jason Kringle on Twitter. This is very festive. This is Jay Jones from the Silver and Gold podcast and Wild Pod, a Wild Dog podcast. And he's part of a new podcast called Beetlemania soon about the Blue Beetle.
God.
And anyways, I was 1 week old when The Godfather was released on the US. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Cool. Mario at Luthor Lang said, simple, it's The Empire Strikes Back.
Another one.
Cool.
We had from Dr. Ange, and he said Superman 233.
Ooh.
It looks like it came out in January, according to the cover. Yeah.
Between the Pages at BTP Blog said,
hey, Karen.
The Jetsons, Dr. No, and the Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. That's a nice collection there. Yeah.
That's a classy bunch of things.
Yeah.
I'm the Gun. He said David Bowie's Low came out when he was born. That's a good album. It's got Breaking Glass on it and stuff like that. It's a good one.
Okay. Bob Gar came back with another one, and he said, all right, hope this one makes it to you in time. And he showed us a picture of Judge Dredd on a 2000 AD statue and said 40 years.
So 2000 AD.
Yes.
2000 AD came out when he was born.
Yes. Nice.
That's cool. We heard from Aaron Long, who wasted our time with telephones are pretty cool. So is sunlight. Okay.
He's old. So old.
Yeah.
Dean H.S. Jones said on Twitter, RE question of the week, Star Wars.
Nice. We heard from DS Naris, and this is Darren Sutherland again, and he said, TV shows that premiered that year include Get Smart, Hogan's Heroes, Wild Wild West, I Dream of Jeannie, all favorites. Cool. And he also said, I grew up a fan of the TV series Emergency. The main characters drove Squad 51, which sadly matches my age now.
We heard from Richie O'Hara Beeman. Hey, Richie. And he said, time will tell if any of these cheeky little numbers will prove to be as culturally significant as me, though. And he gave us pictures of A Nightmare on Elm Street, Gremlins, and the Ghostbusters poster. That's a good year.
That was a great year for movies, 84. Mm. What a year. We heard from TMG Cast, the Mina Geek, and he said THX1138.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I have. It's boring.
Right. I am warned. We also heard from Rifty at Rift1821 on Twitter, and he said, Wilfred, I can't find the question of the week tweet because I left it too late to have a good look, but here is my answer, and it is Phil Collins in the air tonight.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay. He wouldn't help if you were driving, remember?
Oh, you ding dong.
We had some answers over on Facebook. We heard from David Ennis, and he said, my good woman. And then he said, is she something though? In that case, MASH or A Clockwork Orange came out. Same age as him.
Yep. Jared Driscoll, also on Facebook, said, the song Disco Lady by Johnny Taylor. I think I know the song, but I'm going to have to do some research to confirm.
David Jones, he said The Exorcist.
Creepy.
Have we had anything from David Jones before?
I think that might be David's first. Hello, David.
Hello, David.
Yes.
Welcome.
And we also heard from Keith G. Baker, who said The Godfather and Pong.
I don't remember that film, The Godfather and Pong.
It was one of the more underrated sequels. Yeah.
Right.
All right, Paul, out with it. What's something that's cool that came out and is the same age as you?
Well, by weird coincidence, issue 119 is the same age as me of Doom Patrol. One we talked about tonight is exactly the same age as me within a few. And also the same age as me is the first appearance of Guy Gardner.
So you're the same age as Guy Gardner.
I am the same age as Guy Gardner.
Or Guy Gardner's the same age as you.
Yeah, but I mean, I picked this question precisely because I knew we were going to talk about this issue, this episode. But I didn't expect the questions to go off like they did. So lots of good answers there.
Plus, what about extra you, week? So yeah. For me, I'm going to keep it all Australian, just for laughs. The first one, I'm going to say it's not quite a thing. Megan Gale, same age as me.
Oh.
You know, she's pretty cool. She's, you know, rather attractive lady, and she's, you know, in interviews she seems quite down to earth and quite normal, I guess. So that's cool. The other one relates to a classic moment in Australian TV history when Graham Kennedy had his late night TV show. Well, late back in the 50s would have been not as late as these days, but he did his very first crow call live on national TV, which is essentially swearing. Because those who know me, they know I like a bit of a swear word. But imagine in 1950s Australian TV, a very popular television host going off with a as his crow call, and then getting taken off the air during the ads, and having Bert Newton step in for the rest of the episode.
But you weren't born in the 50s.
No, but it may have been. Well, whatever year it was the same age as me. It happened like 41 years ago. He started the show in the 50s. It happened.
Oh, okay. I see what 70s. You're saying. Yeah. Okay, good. Just pull out your driver's license, Mike, and have a look at the date.
Now I'm old and confused. Hang on. I'm sure my research had that right. I'm going to stop it right now. Nah, I'll stick with that. I'm sure I was correct. If it's wrong, I'm an old, confused man. I don't care. It's late, I'm tired and cranky.
All right.
Huh.
Well, I think we're closing in on the end of the episode at this point.
Yes.
Yes. So we will be back next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be looking, we're going straight through. We're just carrying on with 1960s Doom Patrol, and we're going to do the last ever issue of Volume 1, Issue 121.
What a way to see out the year.
I know.
Last step for the year and last issue of Volume 1. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Wow.
Anyway, we will be having a question of the week. And that question is, what is the worst continuation or sequel, etc., to something? So please send your answers to Twitter at WFDpod, email waitingfordoom@gmail.com, the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, or you can pop them in the thread at the end of mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, where Doug will put up a thread about this show with pictures and things that you know, will illuminate the color for people and give the visuals. We are relying on our imagination mostly, but you can rely on your eyes when you see his posts.
Right.
But I just want to wish everyone a wonderful, safe, festive season. Mm-hmm. No matter your religion or inclinations, have a fantastic time.
Have a fantastic, and yes, a safe time as well.
Safe time. You know, if you're with family and you're not that into it, hope it goes quick. But if you are into it, I hope it lasts a long time.
Yes. If you don't have family nearby, I hope you can spend some quality time with good friends.
Mm.
Or be by yourself if that's what you prefer.
I hope you're no one is near a jerk for the,
yes,
this season.
Have a jerk-free, festive, non-denominational end-of-year celebration.
Merry Space Mass.
All right, let's get out of here. See you all next time for more Waiting for Doom.